Welcome to the Goth Librarian Podcast, an audio collection of the dark, the dreary, and the downright disturbing. Hello, listener. What has been your favorite episode of the podcast so far? Mine was definitely the one entitled A Cure for What Ails You, Episode 7. It could be my endlessly curious mind, but something about the astounding ways our ancestors treated maladies keeps me intrigued. In this continuation on quackery, I dive into even more cure-alls and their morally corrupt inventors. My focus for this specific episode is quackery that claimed to cure cancer. I spoke a bit about one of the head honchos of medical fraud, John Brinkley, in episode 7. He was known as the goat gland doctor, and he made people believe he could restore virility by surgically implanting the glands of goats into male humans. Then there was Norman Baker, a charlatan who claimed he had invented a cure for cancer. Much like Brinkley, Baker used radio broadcasting to promote and win favor for his miracle product. Norman G. Baker was born on November 27, 1882, in Muscatine, Iowa, to a large and wealthy family. He was the youngest of 10 children. His father, John, was a prolific inventor, while his mother, Frances, had been a published writer prior to marriage and motherhood. Norman left home during his sophomore year of high school, working as a machinist before pursuing grander dreams. He had fallen in love with vaudeville after attending a show and established his own traveling troupe. The show's main draw was that it featured a mind reader who called herself Madame Pearl Tangley. Over its 10-year run, the mystical clairvoyant would be played by a slew of attractive young ladies. It is rumored that Baker was briefly married to one of the madams, but an annulment quickly followed. Baker was likely more noted for his invention and patent of a musical instrument called the calliophone. This portable organ used air pressure to produce a louder sound than its predecessor, the steam organ. Baker himself resembled somewhat of a vaudeville caricature, with his flamboyant demeanor and trademark look, a white suit with a lavender tie. In 1924, as the popularity of radio climbed, Baker convinced the town to apply for a permit. Once it was granted, he established the radio station KTNT, an acronym for Know the Naked Truth. It was popular for a time, until Baker began slandering his enemies on air. This alienated many listeners. In 1929, Baker became aware of a man named Dr. Charles Ozias from Kansas City. This man claimed to have created a cure for cancer. First, to be clear about Baker, he had no medical training whatsoever. He believed outlandish things, like aluminum-based utensils caused cancer. He notoriously hated the American Medical Association and referred to surgeons as cutters. So naturally, he created the Baker Institute in Muscatine, Iowa, a center for cancer sufferers. The hospital consisted of 100 beds with patients under the care of various physicians and medical specialists who had earned their title from diploma mills. On air, Baker asked for 5 volunteers with cancer to be test subjects. Baker had obtained Ozias's miraculous cure, which could be administered by injection. The treatment would be free. His claims were made even more enticing since his treatment didn't involve any painful surgeries nor extensive tests. Horrifyingly, all 5 human guinea pigs would end up dying, at least in part, due to Baker's supposed cure. Riding off the coattails of his own fame, Baker established a tabloid magazine of the same name as his radio show. In the issue that was released in December of 1929, the tabloid published the study's findings. The first man who died from the fraudulent treatment was depicted in the tabloid alongside 2 young boys with a headline that read, "Cancer is cured." The other patients all gradually died, and yet Baker never revealed the truth. He even heartlessly reprinted the December issue the following year. The magical serum injected into the sickly patients contained the following: brown corn silk, clover leaves, alcohol, glycerin, and carbolic acid mixed with tea brewed from watermelon seeds. Just worth a mention, carbolic acid is poisonous if someone swallows or even touches the chemical. And yet, the charlatan was still not exposed for his deception. He opened a second cancer treatment facility in 1937, this time in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. The opulent Crescent Hotel and Spa has a complex history dating back to 1886 when it was first built. The stories held within its walls lead many to believe it is one of the most haunted buildings in America. In favor of staying on track, I'm just going to include details that pertain to Baker's story. When he purchased the extravagant property, he remodeled and rebranded it into the Baker Cancer Clinic. He marketed the Crescent as the castle in the air. Promotional materials for the clinic read, "We cure cancer tumor without operation, radium, or X-ray. We treat all ailments. We do not cut any organ." Since Baker was well aware that the means of acquiring his wealth were entirely unscrupulous, he constructed an escape route. His office suite on the first floor had a hidden staircase for a swift exit. Because innocent people totally anticipate becoming a fugitive and plan accordingly. It doesn't come as a shock that while Baker was running his hospital, authorities were already investigating him. Several years prior, the state of Iowa had fined him for practicing medicine without a license. But Baker had also been operating a mail-order business simultaneously, selling the nonsense cure-alls we all laugh at incredulously now, but at the time was alarmingly widespread. And that's how the feds finally took him down. He had fallen under the suspicion of postal inspectors for years. In 1939, he was arrested for mail fraud after authorities intercepted 7 letters advertising his fraudulent cures. His elixirs had earned him $500,000. That was in addition to the incalculable profits made off exploiting hopes raised in the suffering and their loved ones. Norman Baker was sentenced to only 4 years in Leavenworth Prison. In the 2 years that Baker's cancer clinic was operational, at least 40 of his patients died. He died of cirrhosis of the liver in September of 1958. The lives of John Brinkley and Norman Baker bore striking similarities. Both ran for governor, cheated the gullible out of billions, and showed no remorse. But unlike Brinkley, who claimed to be a licensed physician, Baker never claimed to possess medical knowledge. Instead, his cynicism about the American Medical Association, science, education, and religion earned him a following. Because real doctors hadn't found a cure for cancer, maybe it wasn't such a wild idea that an entrepreneur can emerge with one. But it was not only wild, it was deadly. In April of 2019, a groundskeeper of the Crescent Hotel gradually found glass bottles scattered behind the hotel. She was digging to construct a new archery court. After reporting her findings to the owners, archaeologists eventually stepped in. They uncovered nearly 500 glass bottles. Around 20 of those bottles contain what experts believe to be human tissue, still preserved and floating in alcohol from nearly 90 years ago. Other bottles remain filled with his useless concoctions or fake tumors, in case patients questioned if his treatment methods were working. Additional items found include a bone saw, a medicine spoon, and film reels advertising Baker's facilities and mail order products. The third cog in the charlatan wheel was Harry Hoxie. If Norman Baker was the idea man, Hoxie was the one who put those ideas into action. In the book, The Medical Messiahs, A Social History of Health Quackery in 20th Century America, medical historian James Harvey Young details how Hoxie earned his place in the Hall of Frauds. Harry M. Hoxie was born in 1901 in the rural town of Girard, Illinois. He was one of 12 children, their father being a self-taught veterinarian who died of cancer before Harry would reach the age of 18. His mother died 2 years later, also from cancer. The cause of his parents' deaths was something Harry kept secret most of his career in order to maintain the lie that brought his fortune. Harry was described as quick-witted, ambitious, and persuasive in his youth, but the loss of his parents was crippling. Harry dropped out of school in the eighth grade, eventually getting his high school diploma from a correspondence school. At age 20, he began to work toward a brighter future. He started working as a coal miner and then an insurance salesman. But hard labor and honest work wasn't really his style. He sought to make money by easier means. Setting aside any moral quandaries over padding his wallet, he began to peddle an herbal cure for cancer. Like any nostrum of the period, his product came with a backstory. The medicine, he claimed, was invented by his great-grandfather. One day, while out for a stroll, he noticed one of his horses grazing in a meadow. This particular horse had a cancerous tumor on its leg. And yet, after eating a particular wild plant, the tumor vanished. Or so the story goes. And it's not clear if the tumor just went poof in an instant, or maybe a few days after the horse consumed the plant, or if the plant was eaten frequently over a span of time, or so many questions. The fable, family history, persisted in its absurdity. Apparently, the remedy had been passed down from Harry Hoxie's great-grandfather all the way down to Harry's own father. Harry was required to write out the fine details of the secret mixture 250 times. The reason for this was Harry needed to commit it to memory so he could someday earn his riches off of it. Not really clear why no other Hoxie didn't try to sell the totally legit medicine before Harry came along, or why the herbal cure wasn't used to treat Harry's own father's cancer, but anywho, it's a good story. Hoxie's career as a peddler of quackery began in 1922. His first grand claim stated that his natural anti-cancer paste cured a Civil War veteran of lip cancer. This garnered the attention of investors who fronted him enough money to purchase and renovate an old building in Taylorsville, Illinois. He called his faux medical facility the Hoxie Cancer Institute. Much like Baker, he lured cancer patients with lofty promises of a painless treatment under strict medical supervision with permanent results. Hoxie's clinic attracted a steady influx of patients over the course of 2 years, until a local actual doctor noted a pattern. Many patients went in, but never came out. A former patient of Hoxie had visited another local doctor. This doctor found that the paste Hoxie applied to a tumor on the patient's cheek had caused necrosis of the soft tissue and ate away at some bones. 2 days later, the patient died in the hospital of a hemorrhage. The American Medical Association was contacted soon after by that doctor. The fact that Hoxie's anti-cancer paste ate away at the patient's face is not surprising, given the main ingredient was escharotic, a corrosive chemical. It had been previously used by doctors to treat cancers of the face, but because the chemical couldn't differentiate between healthy and cancerous tissue, it was deemed far too dangerous for use. Surgery was safer. 3 lawsuits against Hoxie ensued, all regarding him practicing medicine without a license in the state of Illinois. The only option was to shut down the Taylorsville Clinic, which happened in 1928. So he tried to duplicate his success in other Illinois towns, including his birthplace of Girard. Hoxie created quite the public spectacle in collaboration with the town's Chamber of Commerce by holding a Hoxie Day, complete with a bandstand, minister, the Civil War veteran he had treated, and dozens of other patients who sang his praises for curing them. He continued to pay fines for practicing without a medical license, moving to several other towns, including Muscatine, where he paired up with Norman Baker before they had a falling out and parted ways. In an effort to evade further prosecution, Hoxie relocated his business 4 times, first to Michigan, then West Virginia, and then New Jersey. Finally, in 1936, Hoxie nested his business in Dallas, Texas. In Dallas, he was met with the same charges, but filed appeals, eventually earning an honorary degree as a doctor of naturopathy. This earned him a medical license in the state of Texas. Around this time, chemotherapy was developed. Hoxie's paste only treated external cancers. To keep up with an evolution in treatment, Hoxie invented an internal formula. The color varied from pink to brownish black. Later examination revealed the ingredients. It was comprised of water, potassium iodide, an herbal laxative, sugar syrup, and an array of plants that included alfalfa, buckthorn, and red clover blossoms. Just like in Girard, Hoxie's claims in Dallas were fortified by patients willing to give testimonials about the success of their treatment. A 1956 Life magazine article estimated that the Dallas clinic brought in $1.4 million annually. The cost of basic treatment was $460 per patient. Some patients came from across the country to be treated at Hoxie's clinic. They had heard about it from printed pamphlets and word of mouth. By this point, Hoxie was so renowned that doctors in other states wanted in. Hoxie established a mail-order business where doctors across the nation could order vials of his brown and pink tonics. His cancer clinic had become the biggest of its type in the world. He released a book called You Don't Have to Die and expanded promotion for his products and clinic on radio stations in Mexico. Two U.S. senators even supported him. Through a Senate resolution, a subcommittee was formed to hold hearings and verify that Hoxie's cure was a legitimate cancer treatment. In 1949, the Journal of the American Medical Association called Hoxie a cancer charlatan. When Hoxie caught wind of this, he filed a defamation suit and won, though the money he was awarded was a meager $2. The FDA finally stepped in, testing both Hoxie's herbal medicines and looking into the medical records of living patients who claimed to have been cured. A trial began in 1950. Of the 11 patients that testified at the trial, only 3 of them had any proof that they had ever even had cancer. In one case for the prosecution, a 16-year-old boy with a malignant tumor on a bone in his leg had been advised by doctors that an amputation could save his life. Hoping for a better outcome, his family had taken him to Hoxie's clinic. The boy diligently took the tonics for 4 months, but several months later, he died uncured. The FDA also tried to halt Hoxie's mail-order operations. Years of litigation followed, and Hoxie fought back, but the FDA won on appeal. His business expanded, opening a clinic in Portage, Pennsylvania. In a stroke of bad luck, one of the first patients turned out to be an undercover investigator for the FDA. After undergoing a brief examination, the investigator, who is perfectly healthy, was told by Hoxie that he had prostate cancer and needed treatment immediately. Soon after, a federal marshal showed up and confiscated Hoxie's stock, 500,000 bottles of his tonics. The FDA published a warning in the Federal Register in 1956. It had been determined by government scientists that Hoxie's medical preparations were ineffective and dangerous. One of the tonic's ingredients, potassium iodide, was actually proven to accelerate the growth of a tumor. The following year, the FDA ordered post offices across the country to hang posters warning of the dangers of the Hoxie cancer method. The headline of the poster read, "Public Beware, Warning Against the Hoxie Cancer Treatment." Included in these posters were the cost of treatment and the affirmation that the cures had all been tested and proven useless. It went on to say, in bold red letters, quote, "Those afflicted of cancer are warned not to be misled by the false promise that the Hoxie cancer treatment will cure or alleviate their condition. Cancer can be cured only through surgery or radiation. Death from cancer is inevitable when cancer patients fail to obtain proper medical treatment because of the lure of a painless cure as claimed by Hoxie," end quote. Hoxie retaliated with a federal lawsuit claiming that his cure was a property right that was being violated without due process. But the case was dismissed by a federal judge, stating that the government was simply spreading information that concerned public safety. And just like dominoes, Hoxie's quackery empire was knocked down. His Pennsylvania and Dallas clinics closed their doors. For a time, Hoxie still turned a profit by the sale of his treatments by other Dallas doctors, but it wasn't long before the FDA learned of this and shut it down. Hoxie had been the largest, unorthodox cancer treatment promoter of the 1950s. But, as a respected and world-renowned cancer authority pointed out, there had been 13 others scattered around the country who had been major promoters of miraculous cancer treatments. In response, the American Cancer Society issued a catalog of unproven methods of cancer treatment in 1966. In 1967, Harry Hoxie was diagnosed with prostate cancer. In an act of either delusion or arrogance, he used his famous herbal treatments on himself. Unsurprisingly, it yielded no results. He relented to having surgery performed, which extended his life until 1974. The cancer war was over for Harry Hoxie, both personally and professionally. What began as a liniment cure-all evolved into a supposed cancer cure. Hamlin's Wizard Oil was invented in 1861 by two Chicago-based brothers, John and Lysander Hamlin. John was a former magician and decided that medical quackery would be more profitable. The slogan created for their liniment was, "There is no sore it will not heal, no pain it will not subdue." Adverts claimed the product could remedy all of the following conditions: rheumatism, neuralgia, toothache, headache, diphtheria, sore throat, lame back, sprains, bruises, corns, cramps, colic, diarrhea, and all pain and inflammation. It was determined the liniment's ingredients were 50 to 70% alcohol, as well as turpentine, camphor, ammonia, cloves, sassafras, and curiously, chloroform. Unlike most liniments that were strictly for topical use, Wizard Oil could also be used internally. One advert had an elephant extending its trunk to its mouth to spill in the contents of a medicine bottle. It claimed that Wizard Oil was for man and beast and was the best pain remedy on earth. Performance troops at medicine shows across the Midwest demonstrated the efficacy of this wondrous product. Products sold at medicine shows came in two sizes and cost 35 cents to 75 cents. The product soon landed in pharmacies across the U.S. In time, Lysander Hamlin's son Lawrence took over management of the company. He sought to expand the business to align with current consumer health demands. Pamphlets were released with the additional claim listed that Wizard Oil could cure more serious conditions, including cancer. The Secretary of Agriculture soon came across the pamphlets, who urged the district attorney for the Northern District of Illinois that this was dangerous misbranding. In 1916, the Hamlin Company pled guilty. Lawrence Hamlin paid a $200 fine in addition to court costs. The company was forced to remove cancer treatment claims from its pamphlets. While the claims that it was a cure-all are ludicrous, it wasn't all hogwash. The ingredients it contained are ingredients still found in modern treatments for topical pain relief. Since the 1950s, the U.S. cancer rate has increased by 1.2% each year, with the rate of specific cancers, like breast cancer, increasing at higher rates. According to the American Cancer Society, early in the 20th century, only cancers small and localized enough to be completely removed by surgery were curable. In 1903, radiation therapy was first used to treat cancer. It wasn't until the 1950s that chemotherapy was even an option. As someone who has had various loved ones with cancer, I find it upsetting that these men and countless others exploited the hope of those suffering. Nearly 70 years after these charlatans tried to peddle their easy cures, we still have not discovered a cure for cancer. But I understand the desperation these patients and their families must have felt. The glimpse of hope on the horizon that wellness was a tonic or a liniment away, and the jarring realization they had chosen the wrong path in an effort to stay alive. My heart goes out to those who died while these heartless liars became wealthy.
Like what you hear? Follow me on Twitter at Goth Podcast and Instagram at that_gothlibrarian. Thank you for listening.